I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Mraz. Today's show was fuller than me after an NFL Sunday. Enjoy the takes and laughs in the best of the DA show.
The Los Angeles Dodgers leading the series 3-2 at a chance to close out. The only way that the Tampa Bay Rays could stave off elimination and force a Game 7 was if their ace, Cy Young Award winner Blake Snell, threw darts, kept the Dodgers lineup, which is incredible and deep, off balance, and that the Rays won a low-scoring game. They needed Blake Snell to be at his absolute best. And guess what? He was. Snell, who kind of ironically was the face negatively portrayed to start this baseball season. Remember months ago, back in the spring and early summer, when we didn't know whether there was going to be a Major League Baseball season, and the owners and the players were locked in a contentious battle over how it would take place, and how many games it would be, and whether the players would get a full prorated part of their salary. It was Blake Snell who was the voice of the players and drove a lot of people batty. It was Blake Snell who was playing video games on Twitch. You could watch us on Twitch, use the CBS Sports Radio channel. And during this video game session, he was griping, saying, "I'm going to get my money. I'm going to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get my money." And it just seemed so tone deaf at a time when the country was bracing during the early stages of a pandemic, and that these millionaire baseball players were finding any excuse not to play, when really it wasn't about the fear of COVID. It wasn't about worries about health or wellness. It was just about wanting to make sure they got fully paid. It was just really distasteful, and it drove a lot of people up a wall hearing these multi-million dollar baseball players kind of speak out of pocket just about making money and not about anything else. So Blake Snell was the first voice that got a lot of attention for this baseball season. And then last night he was the last voice, because while rolling through his start, the Rays overraid. The Rays and their booklets and reams of information, their binders of metrics and analytics and stats and numbers, looked at Blake Snell, looked at his body of work, looked at his percentage in the third time around the order. And while Randy Arozarena had given the Rays a one-run lead, Kevin Cash, the manager, and I'm sure a call from up above as well, said, "You know what? Get Blake Snell out of there. He did enough. Let's turn it over to our dominant bullpen. We have a lead. We're getting into the mid to late innings. Get Blake Snell out of there so that the Dodgers can't do damage on him in their third time around the lineup." It blew up in the Rays' face. The Dodgers offense takes advantage immediately of Blake Snell not being in there, put 2 runs on the board in that inning, end up winning 4-1. The Dodgers are World Series champs. Now, the Dodgers were the best team in baseball by record all of this year, despite it being shortened. The Los Angeles Dodgers proved that over the course of a 7-game series, they are better than the Tampa Bay Rays. And the Dodgers are deserving World Series champions. And they are the first time since 1988 celebrating their championship. So props to the Dodgers. And we'll have plenty more on them as the show goes along. And then the crazy storyline of Justin Turner of the Dodgers testing positive for COVID mid-game last night, which was just another monkey wrench thrown into the works of a nutty Major League Baseball season. But last night comes back to Blake Snell and the Rays outraying themselves, overthinking the moment. Did the Rays cost themselves a World Series? It is where we begin. Your cold open.
No balls, two strikes, two out. Urias to Adames. Call strike three. The Dodgers win. Finally, the wait is over. The Dodgers are the champions of 2020 in a year like no other, where joy has been so hard to come by.
This is our year. We said it. This is our year. Everyone in this ballpark wearing Dodger blue, everyone all over the world wearing Dodger blue, never wavered. This is our year.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Charlie Steiner on Dodgers Radio. Dave Roberts celebrating the win. And look, a couple of weeks ago, not so long ago, I said that Dave Roberts needed to be fired. They were down 3-1 in the NLCS, the Atlanta Braves. And I said, how long are the Dodgers going to hang on to this guy? And every single year, every single October, they flame out the same exact way. And that was definitely a turning point for the Dodgers. They end up winning three consecutive games to go to the World Series, end up winning the World Series in six games. Congratulations to the Dodgers. They were a phenomenal outfit. They have been for many years now. And to finally get off the schneid and to win a World Series, I don't care if this was a bubble World Series. I don't care if this was a 60-game regular season. They are absolutely deserving. They were the best team in baseball this year. They deserve that championship. And they did all of the things they needed to do when so their backs were up against the wall, down 3-1 in the NLCS. From there, they took over. And last night when the Rays go to their bullpen in the sixth inning, the Dodgers have to be good enough to take advantage of it. This is what good teams do. We've seen the Patriots do this in football for 20 years. The moment you make a mistake, they're good enough to capitalize. Don't make a mistake because they will then snap into action, click into gear, and beat you. And that's exactly what the Dodgers did last night. The Dodgers in the bottom of the sixth had not been able to get any solid contact to Blake Snell. He was dealing. He wasn't walking anybody. He wasn't laboring. His pitch count wasn't up. They weren't working counts. Bottom six, you had Austin Pollock pop out for the first out of the inning. And then the second batter of the inning is Barnes, who singles to center. At that point in time, after just 5 1/3, is when Kevin Cash decides to yank Blake Snell. And once Anderson came in for the Rays is when the Dodgers pounced. Immediately, Mookie Betts doubled. That put runners on second and third. Okay, then there was the wild pitch. That's when Barnes scores. Betts goes to third. Then Corey Seager, fielder's choice. Betts gets that great jump from third, beats the throw at the plate. It's 2-1. Justin Turner has a big fly after the outfield of the warning track. It's an out, and then Max Muncy ends up grounding out to shortstop, but the damage had been done. The Rays were a little rattled. The Dodgers saw an opening, and they did it. Final score, Dodgers 3, Rays 1. They tacked on another when Mookie Betts went yard a few innings later. Sorry, I said Dodgers 4-1 earlier. Dodgers 3-1 in the win. And you just can't convince me that that is ever going to be a palatable decision for the Rays organization. And analytics giveth and analytics taketh away. The Rays had only gotten to that point in time, Game 6 of the World Series, the one seed of the American League, knocking off the Yankees and knocking off the Astros by being the Tampa Bay Rays, by finding any metric loophole and taking advantage of it. And they did it better than anybody else. Defensive shifts, a parade of bullpen arms, platooning, righty-righty, lefty-lefty matchups. They have been the best at it. And so it got them there. But once you are there on the precipice, it is okay to dump the binder. Okay, because here's the bit. If you play things out over 162 games and multiple playoff rounds, then probably the numbers will bear out that Blake Snell should be pulled after the first two turns around the lineup. And that's what the history has told them, and that's what the numbers suggested, and that if you did that every time over the course of a baseball season, you would play out as correct more often than not. But Game 6 of the World Series is not like 162. It's not like many rounds of the playoffs. It's not a huge sample size where you're playing the odds. Game 6 of the World Series is the moment where you've got to open up your eyes and go with your instinct and your baseball feel. And the fact that the Dodgers, after the game, said they were thankful that Blake Snell came out, and the fact that Blake Snell said he was disappointed that he came out, and the fact that Blake Snell threw only 73 pitches last night, 73, and had completely torched the next three batters that were coming up when he got yanked, tells you that the Rays did something that they should not have done. And I say the Rays, not just Kevin Cash. I believe this is an organizational thing. The Rays did something they should not have done. They ignored their baseball instincts and went strictly with the computer. And it's kind of amazing that it is this glaring. It is in bold neon lights that in 2020, when it's all about numbers and metrics and analytics and sabermetrics and these deep analytic departments and resources invested by these teams, that it came down to baseball versus numbers last night. And the team that has been with the numbers, that had gotten them there and rode the numbers, went with the numbers one too many times because they couldn't take their nose out of the book. It was the mistake of the year. It's one of the mistakes of the World Series history. There's no other way to cut it. At that point in time, Blake Snell needs to stay in. And it was so stark. The moment he came out, the Dodgers had life. Congrats to the Dodgers, 2020 World Series champions. What a World Series that was. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. I know you guys want to jump in on last night's World Series, Dodgers in six. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. I don't know how many other ways there is to cut it, Mraz. I didn't see anybody on social media last night, nor did Buck or Smoltz, nor anybody post-game on any of the post-game coverage I saw defend the Rays for what they did last night. Can you?
No, you can't, but it's interesting because this goes back to something I heard 3 weeks ago on a rival network. Buck Showalter had a great point. This was during the Yankees-Rays series when Blake Snell did not start on 3 days rest in Game 5, and instead they went to Tyler Glasnow on 2 days rest. And it was the idea that Blake Snell was always on these counts, not going through, and the whole reason for it was on a regular team with a regular payroll, with a regular manager and a regular organization, just let Blake Snell rip it out, ride it out on 3 days rest, or go over 80 pitches if the bullpen had it, probably. But the Rays can't afford to play these must-win games, winner-take-all games, winner-take-home games, as if anything goes and a guy could just go as long as he wants. They're going to stick to their computers because not only are they doing the analytic thing, they're protecting Blake Snell from an injury because they need him next year. They're actually not even focused on just this game. It's about this game and next year because of the resources and not being able to replace him.
Do you think last night's decision was based on keeping Blake Snell healthy for 2021?
I think it's absolutely part of it.
73 pitches.
I know, DA, but this is a guy who hasn't cranked it up a ton. It's going to get, if he goes through the sixth, and you probably have to have him go through the seventh and so on and so forth.
Well, you don't have to have him go through the seventh. You get to take it every single inning.
We all know that this was a mistake, but this is in the back of the Rays' minds. They manage games now to protect assets. Nothing, they're not going to let anybody go too long. And it's such a short leash that they give him. Blake Snell, this is nothing new. The spotlight was on Blake Snell in this spot because it was a, you know, the World Series in Game 6. But they've been pulling Blake Snell in early in games all year and all postseason.
That's true.
This is nothing new, so it didn't surprise me last night. But this is when the Rays don't have the resources, this is how they have to manage games. And hopefully last night was such a glaring tipping point that other teams realize you could do some of what the Rays do, but committing to all of what the Rays do will come back and bite you in the ass.
Well, protecting Blake Snell last night for 2021 seems to me to be kind of utterly ridiculous, because if you wanted to say, yes, we don't put Blake Snell out there for more than 80 pitches per start because we want to protect him as an asset on a team that's restricted payroll-wise, I totally get it. Over the course of a season, if you save him 20 pitches every single start, then you definitely protect your asset. But last night, you're talking about the difference of 10 to 15 pitches. I mean, if he went from 75 to 100 pitches, that's 25 total pitches. You can't tell me that that's the protection that they have to have. Even if it's just 90 pitches, 15 more pitches to get out of that inning. That, to me, feels like you got to do it at the World Series.
Of course you do.
If there is any time to do it, you have to do it there.
But there's no varying with the Rays. It's always down the line, and it's always the plan. And sometimes you just need to have some freaking flexibility, and it costs the Rays a ring.
Come one, come all, step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
4 years ago, October the 28th, 2016, we talked Dr. Pepper. Roll the tape. I'm chuckling because it looks like Halloween has come early around here on the DA show. We have Jolton Joe DeLuisio.
Oh, yeah, DA, you like?
On the wheels of steel on the other side of the glass wearing, what's the Dr. Pepper guy's name?
Larry Culpepper?
Larry Culpepper. Dr. Pepper is in my top five of sodas all time and arguably is in my top three.
That's a bold statement.
Bold. I know it's bold. I really think that the Dr. Pepper is like the one game playoff. It's not a division winner. Nobody knows what really it is. I'd like to know if you know what that flavor of Dr. Pepper is supposed to be. I'm intrigued. It is the color is a maroon, but I'm not sure what it's supposed to be. 855. Matt's next up in Washington, listening on CBS Sports Radio's 1090. What's up, Matt?
Hey, I got the flavor for Dr. Pepper. I know what it's based off of.
All right.
Most people aren't going to want to hear this, but it's based off of prune juice.
Prune juice.
I'm telling you.
That doesn't sound right.
It does. My mom told me that, so it can't be a lie. So.
Darren's next up in Pennsylvania, listening on CBS Sports Radio's 96.5. Hello, Darren.
I just want to let you know about a recipe for Dr. Pepper barbecue sauce, man.
Okay. Now, can you tell me what Dr. Pepper's flavor is supposed to be?
It's a proprietary formula, man. They've kept it secret for a long time, and they don't want anybody to have it.
Because there's so much sugar
right.
in Dr. Pepper.
And I would assume with the simmer, some of the sugars of the Dr. Pepper might exfoliate out or
I think
some
it, like,
kind of
boils down.
Some of the moleculars.
Well, ironically, Dr. Pepper pulled pork was on the docket just a few weeks ago for Mraz's Football Food of the Week, and it was a slam dunk. People absolutely loved it. Just for your edification, here, according to a website called The Daily Meal, is what the 23 Dr. Pepper flavors are believed to be. Remember, Dr. Pepper's 23 flavors, part of their branding. This is in alphabetical order. Amaretto, almond, blackberry, black licorice, caramel, carrot, clove, cherry, cola, ginger, juniper, lemon, molasses, nutmeg, orange, prune, plum, pepper, root beer, rum, raspberry, tomato, and vanilla. I don't know how you could ever come up with those 23 flavors and mix them up and make a Dr. Pepper, but Mraz, I will stay true. 4 years ago, I said it. I'll stay true to this 4 years later. Dr. Pepper is definitely in my top five sodas ever and probably in my top three.
It's a fantastic soda. I go vanilla Dr. Pepper now anytime I want to dip in for a little bit of a soda if I see one somewhere. But it's really the juniper and the clove, I think, out of those 23
flavors.
Oh, is
that right? You think the juniper and the clove that really catches your palate?
Those really juniper. Bring everything together. Isn't it amazing, though, there's that many flavors, and you could just drop vanilla or orange in there and then just call it that, and then you really taste that?
Well, that's why I think that this is kind of a lark. I mean, is it possible that in 2020 they're mixing a little plum into Dr. Pepper's recipe? I think it's just a bunch of different sugars that they swirl up in a giant vat and then they just distribute however chemically they do it. I can't imagine there's any like little dash of tomato juice in there or ginger. Come on.
Don't sleep. Those canisters, they make them and are enormous. They're probably just dropping plums and prunes from all over the place.
Maybe once upon a time there was a little bit of clove in there. I don't think they're dropping any clove into Larry Culpepper anymore.
You can't change that recipe, D.A. You don't know what it's like in that plant. There could be anything going on there.
Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. Remember also Larry Culpepper? Is he a thing anymore, the Dr. Pepper guy in college football games?
Every college football playoff. Last year he was still there. Because remember, every one of the conference championship games, they got the kids throwing the footballs through the tires and everything, and they're trying to win scholarships.
Right. I didn't know if Larry Culpepper was still part of that.
I'm pretty sure Larry Culpepper, that bit, he's like Flo. They don't end that bit.
AB, are you a Dr. Pepper fan or no?
Oh, without a doubt. Probably top three just like you. That, regular Coke, and maybe Cherry Coke?
Wow! Me and Bogues might have the same top three sodas ever.
How about that?
But that.
You see that?
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
We start with Tim Tebow, who joined Tiki and Tierney yesterday on what Trevor Lawrence should do in considering his options if the Jets have the number one pick in the draft.
I would really encourage Trevor to find out how are they going to use you, how are they going to support you. If I was him, I would genuinely try to evaluate everything and look at it with open eyes, because he's so good and he's so talented. He needs a great prospect. He will have leverage.
He will. He does. Because if he doesn't want to play for the New York Jets, there's at least 15 to 18 other teams that would quickly dispatch their own starting quarterback for Trevor Lawrence and a chance to trade into that number one slot. So Lawrence does have leverage. We saw Joe Burrow maybe dance with this last year. We never really heard it from Joe Burrow's camp, but we know that Burrow might not have been completely sold that the Bengals were the perfect destination for him. But look, he ended up going there and seemingly helping turn it around within a matter of weeks. So for Lawrence, if he really is that good, he can be the biggest part of the solution. I think for Trevor Lawrence right now, if he sounds like he's keeping his options open, it's because he knows he has options. Not necessarily that he's coming back to Clemson. I don't think that he would come back. But that he always has the opportunity to use his leverage behind the scenes, his agent, whatever, to manipulate where he wants to go. I mean, it doesn't happen often, but it has happened. Eli Manning, obviously, is the most notable example of this. John Elway did this as well. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. And look, we're a long ways away from what the Jets are going to look like in April. Maybe the Jets are 0-16. Maybe they don't even have the number one pick in the draft. Maybe Adam Gase is nowhere to be found. Maybe they hire a brilliant offensive mind and Lawrence is excited about going there. Maybe there's a new GM. Who knows what happens? But I think Lawrence understands that on October 28th, 2020, going into April, he's well ahead of where he has to declaratively say, I'm playing for the New York Jets. Here is Doug Marrone, head coach of the Jaguars, who's oddly fired up for these final nine games.
And I'm not going to beat anyone up. I'm kind of fired up. And I know you guys are probably sitting like, what the hell is going on? How could this guy be fired up? They just lost six in a row. You know, and I understand that. I totally do. But, you know, I'm going to bust my ass, man. I mean, I'm telling you now, I'm you know, I'm going to look at some things. I want to go a little bit outside the box. I mean, I want to, you know, challenge these coaches and challenge these players. And see, I am going to do whatever I can to get the best out of this team and best out of these players. I mean, so, you know, I'm sure people are going to, you know, mock me for that or say whatever the hell they want, but I really don't give a shit. I'm fired up. I'm going to go after it, you know, and, you know, however it falls, but, you know, it's open for me. You know, I've done, you know, crazy shit before.
I.e., I'm coaching for my job these final 9 weeks of the season. So I like this salary. I like the paycheck. So I'm just going to throw everything against the wall and see what sticks. I mean, I love the idea that suddenly Doug Marrone's going to become some creative mastermind and try all these trick plays and gadget looks and everything like that. That sounds amazing to me. I'd love to see the Jacksonville Jaguars try to become the greatest show on turf or revolutionize the defensive side of the football. I want to see all of that. It's like Marrone going, you know what? Fine. I'm going to do everything. I mean, I don't know. We might defer the opening kickoff. Yeah, I might get real creative. Like, first down, we might throw a long on first and 10. Yeah, seriously, yeah. Second and 2, we might throw again. Yeah, you might see us throw again. Uh-huh, that RPO thing, or is it PRO? I don't know what that is. We might try with one of those things, too. Yeah, I'm going to challenge my coaches. Hey, dig into that binder. Find some trick play that you saw in a movie from the 90s and try it. Did you see Any Given Sunday recently? The Replacements? There's got to be something in there we could use. And finally, Ken Carmen, who hosts Weekends on CBS Sports Radio, has a scorching hot food take.
People make excuses for sweet potatoes like they make excuses for bad quarterbacks. Well, they got to be in this system. They got to be in that system. Well, you have to play to their strengths. Ken, you have to have them with brown sugar and marshmallows and butter. How about I just have the marshmallows and brown sugar and butter? Why do I have to put crap on it? Why do I have to put sweet potatoes with it? See, now I'm at my whole sweet potato thing and I didn't even want to do it. I'd rather eat regular potatoes off a bathroom floor than have your grandma's sweet potatoes. I'll tell you
wow.
Right now. 855-212-4CBS. Come on. Bring it on. I dare you. Go right on ahead. I'll tell you right now, America. The sweet potato casserole your grandma made, I'd rather throw it out the window than eat it. I wouldn't feed it to my dogs. I only have one. Hate sweet potatoes, man. Well, you haven't had them right. Trust me, I've had them every single way because I tried to like them because I'm supposed to force myself to like them. And when you tell me, well, Ken, once a year, if you're trying to tell me I got to do it once a year, yeah, I got to do my taxes once a year, too. I don't like doing that either.
Ken Carmen is also a self-described fat guy, right? He's talked about this. So he knows his food. He's an Ohio guy, so he definitely knows his food. I think for Ken Carmen, I got a tough time disagreeing with him there. I think that sweet potatoes are wildly overrated. I think they're fine once a year. Thanksgiving, marshmallows on top, they're fine. But a mashed potato, a French fry, a chips, a wedge, a twice baked. I mean, there's just no comparison. A regular potato thoroughly dominates a sweet potato in every tale of the tape. I got a tough time disagreeing with anything. Now, I wouldn't worry about feeding it to my dog. My dog, any dog, eat anything you put in front of him. I mean, total slop. He's going to eat it. He eats poop. He eats other dogs' poop. He eats his own poop. He smells butts. Obviously, he's going to eat sweet potatoes. But as a human being that has options aside from sniffing other people's butts, I kind of agree. Mraz, where do you fall on this?
I wholeheartedly agree. I never touch sweet potatoes at Thanksgiving.
You don't the fact touch that you eat,
no, and the fact that you even don't know, is it called a yam? Is it called a sweet potato? That throws you off. There are so many better potatoes. In fact, they have only recently, as a recent trend, made French fries out of sweet potatoes because it's the only way to make a sweet potato tolerable. And to Ken's point, if you got to put brown sugar and all this other stuff on it, then how good is it? It can't stand alone. I can eat a mashed potato without gravy. It's a great point by Ken, and you're going to get a lot of these Thanksgiving takes coming. This might be the winner ahead of November.
I'd rather eat regular potatoes off a bathroom floor.
Andrew Bogish, where do you stand on the sweet potato debate?
Well, so, yes, a sweet potato fry is acceptable. That is the best vehicle for a sweet potato. But what Sean, you just said, like, a mashed potato without gravy is still a mashed potato with butter and other stuff in it. So, like, so the comparison would be eating just a potato by itself, which you would always put something on.
No.
Like, just butter. Yeah.
Because you make sweet potatoes with butter. If you made just a sweet potato mash with butter and didn't add the brown sugar or anything, it would not taste as good as the mashed potato with butter. Like, that's a standard ingredient to make the mashed potato. The brown sugar and everything is for the topping and texture. Potatoes.
Yeah, you don't need the toppings, but a mashed potato also has plenty of things added to a potato to make it tasty. You wouldn't want to necessarily eat a baked potato out of the, you know, with nothing on it.
I understand that, but his point was the brown sugar and all of that. You don't need to add that to mashed potatoes. That is my point. I want fresh potatoes.
Yeah, but you have to add butter and salt and maybe a little cream.
You need to add stuff to every food. That's what makes food taste good. I mean, you're the same person who hates Cheerios. Why? Because they're plain. What are you guys talking about?
That's not necessary. Well, now we know the real crux of the problem with your diet is that you add something to everything to make it taste good.
So you guys don't season chicken or a burger before eating?
No, of course. Yes, of course you can season things. But, I mean, there are some foods that are meant to be eaten without your blue cheese and your bacon bits all over top of it.
Cheese.
Croutons.
It's not mashed potatoes with butter. Like, butter is part of the ingredients for the mashed potato to actually exist, is my point. It's not something added extra.
Look,
you can leave the brown sugar and marshmallows off of your sweet potato mash. You don't need to put that on either. But
and
you
the point
to get
is,
it to be...
it would taste like garbage compared to mashed potatoes tasting like that.
With bacon.
You guys don't even know what you're talking about.
I think these are shades of gray here. What you're saying is same ingredients, regular potatoes is better than sweet potatoes with the same ingredients. What Bogus is saying is if you just sliced open a potato, a baked potato, and you just sliced open a steamed sweet potato, neither one of them is actually going to be all that enticing.
All right, but that's not the argument. It's just not.
Well, no, the argument
what
is...
What I heard you say was as if mashed potatoes were the thing by themselves that didn't need anything added to them to make them delicious, but they already had butter and other things added to them.
But that's how you make mashed potatoes. When you say mashed potatoes, the butter is implied. When you say sweet potatoes, the butter is implied.
If I just gave you, Mraz, a potato that was in the microwave for a minute and a half and a sweet potato in the microwave for a minute and a half, do you think you'd enjoy either one of them?
No, but I know I've also had baked potatoes with zero topping on it and just being soft in the middle, and I like it.
Okay, so you would eat a potato that had absolutely nothing.
Right, you just said yes and no to the same question.
And boiled potatoes I've had, yeah. So, yes. Around St. Patty's Day, when you have that overrated meal, I have a bad boiled potato. I don't mind it.
Okay, does Ken Carmen have any food takes you disagree with, Moran?
Yes, he thinks Cheesecake Factory sucks. Which, to me... that is as
surprised you guys are friends, though.
As an egregious a take as somebody could have. Cheesecake Factory is the coup de grace of all chain restaurants. I mean, that menu is an unbelievable book. You say I don't read a book? I've read the Cheesecake Factory menu. It's longer than War and Peace. It is unbelievable. To not like Cheesecake Factory is almost like not liking apple pie and vanilla ice cream in America. It's unbelievable.
All right. That was your sound check here on the DA show.
Bacon.
With bacon.
Game 6 of the World Series last night. One of the most controversial managerial decisions in World Series history. Justin Turner pulled out of the game because of COVID, celebrating on the field afterwards. We just spent 6 minutes on sweet potatoes. So, Bogus, get us back on track here.
Yeah.
Let us know what happened last night in the World Series.
Yeah, it'll be Justin Turner to start. It's kind of the way things should end in this crap year, right? Turner pulled from Game 6 of the World Series. They're testing positive for COVID-19 despite being in baseball's bubble for weeks now in Arlington. Turner was not on the field when the Dodgers claimed the title 3-1 over the Rays. Here's his teammate, Corey Seager.
To have that happen to a guy like that, a dude that's reinvented himself when he came here, what he's meant to this organization, what he's meant to this franchise, what he's meant to this community, and to to take that away from him, you know, it's gut-wrenching. You know, it hurts me. I can't imagine how he feels.
Those are all good points, but they don't make it okay that Turner talked or forced his way back onto the field after the official trophy presentation to celebrate with his teammates. They all touched the trophy. There were hugs. There were high fives. Turner took his mask off for a team photo. The Dodgers were to take PCR tests last night and then again this morning. Now, before Turner, the worst decision of the night belonged to Rays manager Kevin Cash. He pulled starter Blake Snell after Austin Barnes' one-out single in the sixth. Snell had retired 10 Dodgers in a row before that.
That's where I came to the decision. I felt it was best after the guy got on base. Barnes hit the single. Didn't want Mookie or Seager seeing Blake a third time.
However, Snell had retired Betts, Seager, and Turner the first two times through, all on strikeouts. The
incredible
top three in the Dodger order was 0-6 with 6 Ks against Snell. He had just 73 pitches, but out he came. In came Nick Anderson, and there went a double, a wild pitch, and a fielder's choice. The Dodgers had 2 runs and a lead they did not give up. Betts provided the final score with a solo shot in the 8th. Julio Urias got the final out, as he did in Game 7 of the NLCS. Seager voted MVP like he was in the NLCS.
Yet another Dodgers... Nick Anderson that choked away a championship after all the missed free throws of the 95 NBA Finals. This Nick Anderson just comes in and lights fire to the 1-0 lead.
It is the Dodgers' first title in 32 years. It's number 2 in less than 3 weeks for Los Angeles. Panthers head coach Matt Rhule is hopeful that Christian McCaffrey returns from his high ankle sprain tomorrow against Atlanta. That, though, might be unlikely, but at least McCaffrey is now back at practice. Dez Bryant officially joins the Ravens practice squad. His former club in Dallas is trading defensive end Everson Griffin to the Lions for a conditional 6th-round pick. And NFL Network says the Bengals have told Carlos Dunlap to stay home while they figure out what to do with him, maybe trade him. I don't know that this came up on Monday, but Dunlap shared on social media the Bengals' D-line rotations for Sunday's game ahead of time and then had a temper tantrum on the sideline as the Browns were rallying. He has more than once asked to be traded, and maybe they will be able to do that before Tuesday's deadline.
He's Costanza driving the trophy around the parking lot begging to get fired.
So he's trying to give away the secrets of the defense to his team and visibly unhappy as his team is winning on the sideline.
Yeah, I think he actually was pointing out how bad the rotations were, how bad his D-line coach was. I think that was the point of sharing the paperwork.
Boy, the Bengals have quite cornered the market on just disastrous head case malcontents. They have had so many. The Vontaze Burfict, the Pac-Man Jones, now it's AJ Green and Colin Dunlap that both want out. I mean, man.
Wisconsin QB Graham Mertz reportedly testing positive again for COVID-19, which means he can't play or practice for 21 days. We're still awaiting official word on that, as well as Mertz's backup, Chase Wolf, who may have also tested positive. That would put the Badgers on QB4. And that's a young man named Danny Vandenboom. Ooh. I don't know how well he's going to play, but I want a guy named Vandenboom on the field for 4 quarters for Wisconsin as soon as possible.
Wow. Danny Vandenboom and Ben DiNucci starting quarterbacks this week in college football in the NFL. This is exciting.
Vandenboom, Vandenboom, Vandenboom. It's like Mandelbaum, Mandelbaum.
Yeah, that's a great name for a quarterback. Drops the Vandenboom.
Chris Berman would have a field day with that.
Whoop! From the big cheese wheel.
How's he doing, by the way? We checked on him. He's still going?
Yeah, I watched primetime this week. He's going strong.
Camp Randall from the big cheese curd. Vandenboom. Whoop!
By the way, his new best one. Josh Jacobs, Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Oh.
I'm into it. I'm all in on primetime.
Oh. So bad.
That's actually pretty amazing. I might have to give
Josh Vanden lowers the boom. Wisconsin leads 13-6. Had a boom. What is his name? Josh Vandenboom?
No, Danny Vandenboom.
Danny, never a discouraging Vanden Boom. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Like one. MLS last night, the Seattle Sounders clinched their 12th consecutive playoff appearance with a 2-0 win in Vancouver.
Whoop.
And now you can go back to being Berman.
From the big gravy boat, Vanden Boom.
Whoop.
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 Whoop. The Badges.
Whoop.
From the frozen cheese curd, the Badgers. Nick Vanden, lower the boom from Wisconsin.
Stupid. It's so stupid that you can summarize a guy's 40-year career with like 16 total words.
That's basically going to be what they're going to do to me in 2030. They're going to be like, with bacon, mothership connected. Ha, 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 ha. Great career.
With bacon.
Great career, DA. With bacon. You want to say
with
that
bacon
one more time? Really hysterical, you one-note clown.
I can hear the snarky update anchor. He got the great beam me up to the sky last night, Damon Amendolara.
Oh, no. No.
Hashtag zap zap. We got it.
Oh.
We get it.
The mothership has officially landed. Oh.
Yeah. Got that. Disconnected forever.
And DA has finally disconnected for good. R.I.P. Zap Zap. Hopefully he's at the pearly gates with bacon. Back after this.
With bacon. It's the Connor Green Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, Connor Green's going to be the one laughing at my obit. Yeah, great show, buddy. 32 years on network radio. What'd you give us? A couple of sound effects and a with bacon. That's it. You happy?
With bacon. And the pride of West Babylon.
Blobs bar. Cheese balls. Oh, yeah, you had a few hot dog eating contests on the air. Real record-breaking stuff there, D.A. You really changed the medium.
Good morning, D.A. How are you?
Oh, man, what if salsa actually kills you?
Yeah. Poopy-doopy-doopy, doopy-poopy. Find out years later the after effects of all my internal organs burning up from death by salsa is what did me in. Oh, the irony as Connor Green takes over the radio airwaves.
Josh Jacobs, Jingleheimer Schmidt.
This is how we do it. It's Feeling Green with Connor Green every morning here on CBS Sports Radio. It's Green with Envy right after hours with Amy Lawrence.
He has an update anchor named Kermit.
The con man in the mornings.
Mornings are hard. Your sports radio show doesn't have to be.
There's a guy who hates his name is Randy Arozarena. Every time he takes a swing, it's a thing of cosa buena. Run around the bases, he's as fast as a hyena. Arozarena.
Hey, let's go, Ray!
There's a guy who hits his name is Randy Arozarena. Every time he takes a swing, it's a thing, it's cosa buena. Run around the bases, he's as fast as a hyena. Arozarena.
Yurisarena? Or Yurisaroni?
Let's go, Ray!
There's a guy who hits his name is Randy Arozarena. Every time he takes a swing, it's a thing, it's a cosa buena. Running around the bases, he's as fast as a hyena. Arozarena, hey!
Let's go, Ray!
Randy Arozarena hit the home run last night to put the Rays up 1-0. They couldn't hold on because they yanked Blake Snell early, and the Rays fall in 6 games. The Dodgers win the World Series, meaning Mraz gets to eject from Dick Vitale And he, in a Rays uniform, being Mraz's Twitter avatar, so the world can go back to normal. So congratulations, Mraz. You survived despite the Randy Arozarena historic performance of the postseason and the World Series. You now no longer have to use the Rays as your Twitter avatar. How does it feel?
It feels great. That was a long 3 weeks. I couldn't tweet a single thing on a football Sunday. I mentioned this on the PGP without somebody coming at me go, what do you care? You're a Rays fan. There was a moment in time early this morning when I made the switch, though. I thought about keeping the header picture where I'm in one part of the stands, the mascot's in the other part of the stands, because I kind of like that picture, and it doesn't totally signify being a Rays fan, but ultimately, if I'm wiping the slate clean, I got to wipe the slate clean. In fact, I didn't realize until the beginning of the show either, I changed the pictures and forgot I had reluctant Rays fan during the 2020 players written in the profile, so I had to wipe that out, go back to my chicken teriyaki with bacon line. It was a big cleanse. It feels great.
You did pay off the bet because in the wild card round, you promised you would not tweet about the Yankees, but in fact you did, and so we had to drop the hammer on you. You were forced to tweet 14 different things complimentary of the Rays. You kind of snookered your way through that one, but also you had to change your avatar to you in a Rays outfit alongside Dickie V and use that until the Rays were eliminated. So it was cool to see the Rays go to Game 6 of the World Series. You nearly had to soak it for the entirety, the longest possible duration, which would have been a game number 7. You got out one day early, but you paid your penance to it. And hopefully that teaches you a hard lesson, which I'm not sure you will ever totally be a responsible Twitter user.
Probably, maybe not. Although, you know, the irony would have been if the scenario you painted where we postponed Game 7 for like 14 days, imagine we have to sit another 2 weeks with the stupid Rays picture. I mean, that would have been the only, you know, funny thing, I guess, to come out of this Justin Turner thing would have been me marinating for 2 more weeks with the stupid Twitter picture.
Yeah, Justin Turner tested positive middle of the game last night, was pulled out of the game, ended up jumping back into the celebration about an hour after the game ended. So that's become a big hotly debated topic this morning, but I wonder if there was a game number 7, would Justin Turner have, obviously wouldn't be able to play, but if he got others infected, would the Rays and the Dodgers have postponed, if there was a bunch of positive tests, would they postponed for 14 days to quarantine in a World Series game 7 2 weeks from now, thus making Mraz's avatar another 14 days long, which would have been an awesome outcome, a very 2020 outcome. But to this point, Mraz gets to take it off of his Twitter machine. You also heard there the Arozarena Macarena version. This was a song cooked up by our friend Jeff Passan from ESPN, Major League Baseball writer, who debuted this right before the World Series. And I really liked it, and I wanted to hear how the guys did it. I actually think that both Mraz and Bogusz's were pretty good. None of us actually, I think, were better than Passan's, but those are pretty good versions. I took maybe 5 or 6 takes because saying Randy Arozarena fast is kind of tough. But Mraz, you were a one-take Jake there?
I was, but now it's one take, but I also, right before Pete let me record on it, I did a quick mumble. I didn't full out blurt out the word, so I don't know if that counts as a take, if you just kind of read it a couple times quick to make sure you're getting the Arozarena down. But once that light came on, Arozarena, hey, Arozarena, Arozarena, hey. I like the hyena line, too. That could throw you off.
Bogues, how many takes did it take for you?
I think 3, when I realized that hyena line was going to be too tough for me to actually get out cleanly, so I kind of gave up. I'm punted on that one. I was also battling, I meant to do this yesterday, forgot, did it this morning, so I was also battling a fear of waking my family up by going, Arozarena, so I was a little muted in doing it this morning, so that didn't help either, but maybe kudos to Jeff Passan for being creative, although I feel like this is going to plague my brain at least for the rest of today.
No doubt.
Arozarena, hey!
No doubt this is going to end up worming into your brain over the course of today, especially if you hear the name Randy Arozarena. I'd like to play Bogusz's one more time dry, because if we have that, Pete, you know, the one thing about Bogusz is he's very deliberate with his words, and was so here. He takes the slowest pace, which I think was on purpose that he didn't flub this thing up.
There's a guy who hits, his name is Randy Rosarena. Every time he takes a swing, it's a thing, it's Costa Buena. Running around the bases as fast as a hyena. Rosarena. Hey!
Well, maybe not as deliberate as I would have thought. Let's hear Mraz's dry. Mraz is pretty good, and I think Mraz likes to actually sing very much.
There's a guy who hits, his name is Randy Rosarena. Every time he takes a swing, it's a thing, it's a cosa buena. Running around the bases, he's as fast as a hyena. Rosarena, hey! See, you could tell there, I have the Macarena theme going in my head. I'm not convinced Bogish did, you know? I had it.
See,
I
that's
pictured.
Funny. I hear you're adding an extra beat in there to get all those things out cleanly. You're the one that's not on the tempo of the song.
His name is Randy Rosarena. No, there's no doubt of us three.
Rosarena? No, you're adding another beat. Bogish is right.
I've listened to the Macarena way more in my life than you guys do. It's still on my gym playlist.
Really?
Which is a whole other topic.
I love the Macarena. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. I'm telling you, I probably listen to the Macarena at least once a week. So I know I'm not offbeat. You guys are offbeat. I have it registered in my head, ready to go.
I mean, you're also saying it wrong. It's Macarena. You're saying Macarena. So you can listen to it all
you want.
It's not getting in your brain.
Accents happen. Every time he takes a swing, it's a thing. It's a cosa buena.
Yeah, no, that's off. No, that's off. You took an extra beat here. Well, let's play Mine Dry as well. I tried to be on beat, but mine wasn't very good.
There's a guy who hits, his name is Randy Rosarena. Every time he takes a swing, it's a thing of cosa buena. Run around the bases, he's as fast as a hyena. Rosarena. Hey! Rosarena. Hey!
My hate at the end was almost like a samurai.
Yeah, you hit that hey. You sound like you're hiking the ball. You're going to call Omaha next?
Yeah, essentially, I'm Peyton Manning.
Round one.
I'm like Street Fighter.
Fight! Fight!
I kind of picture DA like he's an 8 Mile, though. He has the hood up, the one flap of hair when it's not gelled is like over there, just hitting that hay hard, waving the hand. Rosie the cat staring at him.
Part of the reason
Round
I want
one.
To do,
Fight!
Part of the reason I want to do this exercise is because when the last time we did this and we did Hip Hop Hooray, Bilotti delivered one of the all-time great drops ever. Hey, ho, hey, ho. And I really wanted Pete to do this because I felt like Pete doing the Macarena was going to be instantaneous brilliance. But Pete deferred, said, nah, don't have the time to do this. So we don't have a dry Pete the Body Bilotti Macarena or Rosarena.
I mean, I could try it on the next update.
You want to try it live?
I'll try it live the next update.
We'll do it live. Okay. All right. We'll do it live. All right. So the next update, like 9:30 Eastern?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Hey. Ho. Hey. Ho. Hey. Ho. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I am done here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Drive home safely. Thank you.
Ho.
By the way, when Passan did this on Pablo Torre's podcast, Pablo ended their friendship and banned him from the podcast. He was so offended by the song.
Yeah, from now on, Jeff Passan is going to be he who shall not be named on the Pablo Torre podcast. Hey, ho.
Hey, ho.
Rosarena. Hey.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ho. Ho. Thank you.
Andrew Bogish has our headline this morning. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
Rosarena. Again, these ones are sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Hey. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Clayton Kershaw did his job in games 1 and 5 of the World Series, then watched 7 pitchers get the Dodgers through game 6 last night. Kershaw finally a champion after the 3-1 decision over the Rays in Arlington.
I've been saying, you know, World Series champs in my head over and over again just to see if it'll sink in. And it just... So, no, I can't put it into words yet. I'm just so, so very thankful to be a part of this group of guys.
Fellow lefty Julio Urías got the final 7 outs of Game 6 shortly after a decision that will live in World Series infamy. Rays manager Kevin Cash pulling Blake Snell after dominating for 5-plus innings. Snell had thrown just 73 pitches, that is. Cash got him after he allowed his second hit of the night, a 1-out single in the 6th to Austin Barnes. Struggling Nick Anderson was Cash's choice.
It has been a little bit of a challenging run for him, but over the last 2 years, I think there's an argument to be made that he's been the best reliever in baseball, and we're going to trust that he's going to go do his thing.
You can make that argument, but over the last 7 appearances, Anderson has allowed at least 1 run in each of them. His ERA over 7 over his previous 10 innings. So he comes in last night, gives up a Mookie Betts double, a wild pitch that brings in Austin Barnes to tie the game, a grounder to first, brings in Betts for the go-ahead run. Mookie then goes deep in the 8th. That's your 3-1 final. It's title number 7 for the Dodgers, their first in 32 years.
D.A., do you think that Dave Roberts now deserves one more year, by the way?
When they were down 3-1 to the Braves in the LCS, they said, how many times are you going to keep bringing this guy back and the same thing's going to happen every single October? From that moment on, they won 3 straight in the LCS and then won the World Series in 6.
Motivation.
So I think, frankly, yes, I did exactly to Dave Roberts what you think you did to Giancarlo Stanton.
I think Roberts is back for 2021, folks. Yeah. He's going to be there.
I think they might bring him back this offseason.
Now we get to Justin Turner. Here's what we think we know this morning. The Dodgers informed in the second inning last night that Monday's COVID test was inconclusive. Turner probably should have been pulled from the game then, but stayed in until the 7th when Tuesday's test was positive. Turner was isolating in an office, but apparently forced his way back onto the field to celebrate with his teammates long after the final out last night. Turner mostly wore a mask, but took it off for a team photo where he was sitting next to his manager, Dave Roberts, who is a cancer survivor. Everyone was going to get tested again last night and then again today, and then theoretically be allowed to leave Arlington and finally go back home.
Baseball scoots on this if nobody else tests positive. If Roberts is fine, the rest of the team is fine, baseball's going to scoot on this. And I don't know. Do you think that if they have 7 positives and Dave Roberts tests positive, do you think that we'll learn about that, or do you think that they're going to bury it?
I would think it's going to be hard to bury, but not impossible. I mean, we could certainly not know how bad it is, but we'll know if other people get sick. I don't think they can completely keep this from us, but they can keep from us how they messed up or chose not to follow protocols earlier in the night yesterday.
It makes me wonder, do we really believe Justin Turner was the only player in the bubble to test positive for COVID? That's the one thing about all of this, is that I absolutely give the NBA credit. I give the NHL credit. I give baseball credit. I give all these leagues credit for being able to execute these postseasons and give us a champion. That's been great, and it's satisfying. We see things to an end. I got a bit of a tough time believing that 3 leagues played an entire postseason and 1 guy tested positive in Game 6 of the World Series. It feels like the odds are there were other positives that we just never learned about.
But do you think the players knew about them? Like, the players knew they were positive and went out and played anyway? Because it's not like we had reports of guys not being at games and we didn't know why.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Here's my question. But were they going to have transportation for, like, why wasn't Turner removed from the stadium?
And I'll tell you why I think that we've had positive tests. Last night, you don't have any Dodgers players being like, I can't believe Justin Turner is out there with us. All you have is guys going, he was part of the team. He's one of our guys. He deserves this moment. I think the professional athletes are just not all that scared of this. And I think a lot of Americans might not be as scared of it as others are, pretty obviously. But athletes specifically have seen guys test positive and then just bounce back and nothing. I mean, like, Cam Newton just ended up being a quarterback in the NFL, like, what, 10 days later? It was like, okay, fine, he had COVID. Okay, he might stink, but if he was good, nobody would say a thing about him having COVID. So I just don't think these guys worry about it.
Freddie Freeman.
He was the one guy that said, I got it and I got it bad and it freaked me out.
And then ended up having a monster year after that.
Yeah. So I wonder if we got all the positives.
But doesn't them doing this in Game 6 of the World Series prove that they weren't hiding things? Like, if they were going to hide one, why wouldn't they have kept hiding it?
That's
like,
a fair
what
point.
Would make them change their cover-up last night at the worst possible time?
It's a totally fair point. I don't know also why baseball... Was this the protocol the entire postseason, where if a guy tested positive, you began running tests during the next game?
Yeah.
That seems kind of crazy as well.
This is what we don't know yet. We don't know why the tests always have a day behind. Monday's results go, Monday's tests go in Tuesday morning, like the NFL, the next morning you know the results. We don't know why yet they were not informed until after first pitch about Monday's test. And then their protocol has, an inconclusive test is supposed to be treated as a positive test. So he should have been positive in the second inning, coming off the field immediately then, not continuing through them rushing the Tuesday, the test from earlier yesterday to confirm the inconclusive test as positive, which is what ended up happening here. So that's where all of these things now are on the table. Why was the first result late? Why didn't they act sooner to take him off the field? So like those are the things that they have to answer that actually are easier for them not to answer than far easier than hiding positive tests. They can just choose not to tell us, not explain how they gotten into this situation
that's
in
a good
game
point.
Last night.
It's a fair point. If there was ever a time to bury one of these positives, it would have been Justin Turner last night in baseball. Let it be a thing, and then let it be double a thing by letting him go on the field without a mask after the game. It's like baseball just executed a postseason in the middle of COVID, and they finally have this moment to feel good about themselves. And then it's like Rob Manfred still can't get out of the way of his own bullet train. He just continually seems to walk into this.
I mentioned Carlos Dunlap being told to stay home by the Bengals. Last hour, the Cowboys doing the same thing, apparently, with D-tackle Dontari Poe and cornerback Daryl Worley. They'll be released, according to this report, if they cannot be traded. And no joke, guys, NASCAR still hasn't finished Sunday's playoff race at Texas Motor Speedway. They got a little in yesterday, I believe, before rain intensified. 3 Eastern today is their next chance at restarting and finishing this bad boy.
Did you see that graphic that Fox put up last night about what the temperature is outside or was outside last night versus inside with a closed roof? It was freezing in Arlington last night. What, it was like 29 degrees or something like that? I didn't even think it could get that cold in October in Texas.
No, the whole middle of the country, top to bottom, is in this cold spell. That's why there's been all the snow freaking you out since Sunday. There's a huge drop down of cold air from Canada.
I'm totally used to it snowing in Minneapolis and Kansas City and Denver. I'm not used to 30 degrees at first pitch in Texas in October.
We're getting a 41-degree Halloween here on Saturday.
But, that's happened to us in the past. In New York, we have occasionally had a freezing Halloween. I can't imagine there's too many freezing Halloweens in Dallas.
Yeah. That's probably true.
Well, it might be 80 by Saturday. Who knows? Texas.
Absolutely.
When this is going to change.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it's going to be 72 degrees probably in a couple of days there. Yeah. But, could you imagine last night if it was the old ballpark at Arlington? I keep bringing up the what ifs if this was a normal season, if the Rangers made the World Series. But, if you play at Arlington roof off in October, you don't expect it to be in the 20s.
Right.
That was incredible. Like the roof is on that ballpark, not for cold, but for hot. There is a roof there, assuming that it's too blazing hot to be in the stadium. And last night, it was like, oh, thank God there's a roof. It would have been 30 degrees out.
Brutal.
And now, after weather, let's get stunned.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So Pete may hate Borat too, but guess who doesn't? Kazakhstan. That is, of course, where Borat is from. And when the first film came out 14 years ago, the country formally denounced it and did all it could to disprove some of the things Borat said about his beloved Kazakhstan. But this time around, with Kazakh tourism struggling, the country is embracing Borat, decided that any publicity
that's
now
a real
good
shocker
publicity.
Here.
Come on.
Kazakhstan tourism is down these days?
When was it
struggling?
Up?
It was up. So they have a new campaign. It's four different ads, and it ends with a traveler to Kazakhstan going, very nice, at the end of the thing. So they're completely bought into this now, and this all comes from an American guy named Dennis Keene, who now lives in the country. He went there back in 2005.
Really?
He married a woman from the country. He lives there. He has a travel show on local TV. It was his idea, and the tourism board said, you know what, you're right. So this time they are all in Kazakhstan on Borat number two.
Wow. So now the tourism...
Sell out.
Yeah, now, I mean, no one's still going, but...
The phrase is... Their tourism phrase is Kazakhstan, very nice. Which is just perfect. Which is just freaking perfect. Now, would you guys care to guess where Kazakhstan is? I mean, that's the first part about tourism. People kind of usually want to know where you're located. I would have no idea. So this is not trying to like punk Mraz or anything on bad geography. Would you have any idea where Kazakhstan is? First of all, when Borat 1 came out, I am not embarrassed to admit, I didn't think Kazakhstan was a real place. I thought that Kazakhstan was a made-up country that he was just spoofing.
I'm going to go the western part of the Middle East.
The western part of the Middle East. Okay, so what would it border?
Oh, I mean, you're asking me to border. My point is, it's near the end of the Middle East, moving towards Europe. I don't know what countries it would border.
Well,
but like,
wait,
that's what I'm
which
talking
side
about.
Is Europe, in if you're looking at the Middle East?
Europe would be to the left. So we're right to left on your radio dial.
Okay.
We're going to take
okay,
Kazakhstan. So we're moving Kazakhstan away from Iraq and Iran, and we're going to move towards France, like that way.
Okay, so you think Kazakhstan is on the left side. It's the left tackle to the Middle East.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, Bogus, would you care to guess?
So it's underneath Russia. It's on the underbelly of Russia, I believe. That would be my guess, because I did look up its geographical region. I didn't see a map, but I saw that it's considered a Central Asia country.
Oh.
So it's got to be a little more east, and I think Sean just presented it. So if we turn Russia into the U.S., I feel like Kazakhstan is somewhere underneath, like, Texas or New Mexico.
Okay.
That makes sense.
All right. It's the Mexico to their Russia, okay, according to AB. And Bilotti, would you care to wager here?
I would actually say the same thing, close to Russia, near Russia.
Okay, well, it's definitely close to Russia. It borders Russia. Its entire
northern...
It used
to be part of Russia.
Its northern border is all the southern border of Russia. So you're absolutely right there. It's in the Stan part of the world, okay? So it's... I don't know. It's like the heart of the order where there's just a lot of stands. There's an Afghanistan, a Pakistan, a Turkmenistan, an Uzbekistan, and a Kazakhstan. So it's all the stands. It's not to the left as the left tackle of the Middle East. It's actually kind of above the Middle East. It's north of those countries. So it's not towards Europe, Mraz. It's on kind of the northeastern side of the Caspian Sea.
So this will be a typical geography question before we break here. Does this mean Russia is actually Asia and not Europe?
Russia, I believe... Well, that's a good question. I don't think you can say the eastern part of Russia is Asia, but the western part of Russia, I do believe, is considered Asia. I think that's how that breaks down.
No, you're going the wrong way. The eastern part of Russia would be the Asian part of it.
I'm sorry.
The western part is what's closer to Europe.
That's exactly right. I think. I don't know. We'll have to double check that. Mraz and Bogus shamed me yesterday. DA, you have enough time to get into TV. Find a good TV show. They wagged their finger. They beat my brow. Tried to embarrass me. DA, find a TV show to up your pop culture references. You're an old man, DA. Get off your porch swing and go watch some TV. Well, you know what? I am making a declaration. Mraz and I have a little wager here that he is going to watch the entirety of Hubie Halloween, Adam Sandler's new grotesque Halloween film on Netflix, and I will watch the first two episodes of Breaking Bad. That's about the same time commitment. So I will begin my venture to watch Breaking Bad, which I'm sure is a very good TV series. Number two, it just debuted yesterday, the trailer, that the Peacock app or network is going to have a brand new Saved by the Bell reboot, okay? And this one looks good. It's got Zach now as the governor of California, and his son goes to Bayside. Mario Lopez, A.C. Slater, is some type of guidance counselor or something inside the school. Elizabeth Berkeley, Jesse Spano is also, I think, working in the school. Looks like Kelly Kapowski comes back, Tiffany Amber Thiessen, to be part of the band. It looks like this has got some legs and juice because it's not just a straight reboot and nostalgic. It is also making fun, tongue-in-cheek, self-deprecating of the original series. I like that. I like that twist. I like when you have a sense of humor about yourselves. So, guys, I found my new TV show. It's going to be the new Saved by the Bell.
Oh, you got stuck in the 80s and never left, EA. This is Fuller House all over again. Don't do it.
I've never watched Fuller House, but was it good?
No, it wasn't. It was exactly what this is going to be. Awful.
I don't think so. I think this looks good. I'll report back to you, but I found my TV show, the reboot of Saved by the Bell.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
So today we were discussing our love of Dr. Pepper here on the DA Show. I specifically love Dr. Pepper. And according to whether it's Urban Legend or whatever, there's 23 flavors of Dr. Pepper. They would be amaretto, almond, blackberry, black licorice, caramel, carrot, clove, cherry, cola, ginger, juniper, lemon, molasses, nutmeg, orange, prune, plum, pepper, root beer, rum, raspberry, tomato, and vanilla. Our poll question today, do you think Dr. Pepper's recipe really has 23 different flavors? 53% of you, a very close race, said, of course, while 47% said, no way. Dr. Pepper, created in the 1880s by pharmacist Charles Alderton of Waco, Texas. Today in Waco, this is the most amazing stat dug up by our advanced analytics team, better than the Tampa Bay Rays last night, that citizens of Waco consume 270 bottles of Dr. Pepper per person every year. That essentially, you're drinking at least one Dr. Pepper 4 out of 5 days.
Wow.
That's an incredible amount of Dr. Pepper per year. 270 bottles? There's only 365 days in a year. According to the Dr. Pepper website, the drink does not contain any prune juice. Our Ask the Pros question of the day brought to you by O'Reilly. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Ed tweets in, DA, does Rob Manfred deserve some credit for the World Series happening after the beginning of the season when MLB looked doomed? They plowed through, got it done. Congrats to the Dodgers and the rest of the league. Yes, in some ways, yes. I don't know how much credit. I mean, the fact is, baseball is never really ready to take a full year off. You want to remain, even if you lose money, you want to remain in the public eye because taking a full year off puts you out of sight, out of mind in a rapidly high-paced attention span that we are in and out. And if you took a full year off, I mean, imagine if baseball wasn't played this year, that we would not have seen baseball since spring training in March up until this upcoming March, maybe. And if you're talking about regular season games or games that mattered, you would not have seen a baseball game from October 2019 when the Nationals won the World Series to perhaps opening day, April 2021. You can't go that long. So yes, they found a way to get it done. Yes, they pushed through the outbreaks of the Cardinals and the Marlins. Yes, they figured out the bubble at the end of the playoffs. And yes, they got the season in. I think, though, that they had to get it in. They had to figure out something because the owners knew we can't go a full calendar year and not have a baseball game played. Let's get your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. And this had to do with what we expect the demise, personally, of me to be one day and how it will be reported on the show. This is the epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
That's basically going to be what they're going to do to me in 2030. They're going to be like, with bacon, Mothership connected. Ha, 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 ha. Great career.
With bacon.
Great career, DA. With bacon. You want to say that one more time? Really hysterical, you one-note clown.
I can.
It's 100 years ago you're talking about.
You're the snarky update anchor. He got the great beam me up to the sky last night, Damon Amendolara.
Oh, no. No.
Hashtag zap zap. We got it.
Oh.
We get it.
The mothership has officially landed. Oh.
Yeah. Got the... Disconnected forever.
And DA has finally disconnected for good. R.I.P. Zap Zap. Hopefully he's at the pearly gates with bacon. Back after this.
With bacon.
It's the Connor Green Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, Connor Green's going to be the one laughing at my obit. Yeah, great show, buddy.
But a sad note, Rusty Staub has died at the age of 23.
32 years on network radio. What'd you give us? A couple of sound effects and a with bacon. That's it. You happy?
With bacon.
And the pride of West Babylon.
Blobs bar. Cheese balls. Oh, yeah, you had a few hot dog eating contests on the air. Real record-breaking stuff there, DA. You really changed the medium.
You're using low journalism. That's not nice.
Good morning, DA. How are you?
Oh, man, what if salsa actually kills you?
Yeah. Poopy doopy doopy. Doopy poopy. Find out years later the after effects of all my internal organs burning up from death by salsa is what did me in. Oh, the irony as Connor Green takes over the radio airwaves.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
It's Green with Envy. Coming to mornings here on CBS Sports Radio. This was all because we were talking once again about Chris Berman. Lonnie tweets, oh my God, you guys were killing me. I almost passed out. I was laughing so hard at the Vanderboom. Whoop! My coworker came running over. She thought I was choking. No, it's just the mothership doing it the right way. Mr. Fahrenheit says, so this is the future Chris Berman boomer call. Let's send it out to Camp Randall Stadium, also known as the house that Ron the Great Dane built to see Danny Vander. Boom goes the dynamite. Thunder past the Frank Purdue Boilermakers 31-3 on Saturday. Whoop, whoop, whoop. They're badges. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti, Wheels of Steel, and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, and Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Tomorrow, the annual spooktacular Halloween episode. The Mothership disconnects.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.